The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dollimore.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Episode 909 of I Doubt It Podcast. I am, as I always am, your host, Jesse Dollimore. And I'm joined today by your host, the lovely, talented, and indeed scholarly, Brittany Page, everybody.
So one thing I think we may have talked about last time was that I was the guest host for David Pakman over on his YouTube channel, and we had met up with him when he was here in D.C. for his very important trip to meet with Vice President Kamala Harris.
Yeah, it would be nice to also get an invite, Kamala Harris, Vice President of the United States.
So when we met up with him, we talked about something that is commonly talked about when you meet up with people who also do this type of work online, talk about controversial things, I guess, the news, political commentary, whatever it might be. And we talked about how we handle death threats and how we, the lengths that we go to in order to ensure our safety. And we talked about it for quite a while. And I remember afterward, we looked at each other and we're like, this is not normal.
Yeah. Well, think about it. Think about it from this perspective. If you're a plumber or you hang drywall or you're an accountant or you're a car salesperson, whatever the job, and you go to a convention or you meet up with folks for drinks after work, what are the things that you talk about? You know, oh, the finance director is a pain in the ass, or my sales manager, blah, 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 or this particular regulation relative to plumbing or construction or whatever. How many people get together and reminisce, I'm using that term real loosely, about how many people threaten to murder them because of their job?
Right.
You know what I mean?
And what they have to do in order to decrease the threat from that and ensure that they are safe, that their family is safe. It's very strange.
And I wonder, and I would throw this to the audience, but I would wonder, we could go back through and find out when there are heightened periods of death threats that come in. Because we get a lot. Usually it's from like anonymous idiots or just randos on some freakish Instagram account. There's been a few of those. But sometimes it's serious because it's from their real Facebook account with their real job. And they're not trying to obscure or hide the source of the threat. And those are the times that we get the authorities involved.
Well, we won't get into the results, I guess, of when that happens because... Well,
that's where I paused.
Yeah, I mean, but, and again, that is abnormal too, though, that it's so common that you can break it into types. You're like, I don't worry about these ones where people are like, I'm going to kill you if it's like, you know, not attached to their name or some sort of personal identifying information, because the anonymous comments, it's just like, yeah, that comes with the territory. And you'll hear people who are political commentators online say this too, that they just, if they check their Twitter DMs, that it's just filled with people threatening to rape them if they're a woman, threatening to kill them, threatening all kinds of terrible things. And it's just like a part of being online now, which is so strange that we just have accepted that as, this is part of society. And when you do call the authorities, sometimes you run into people who act like that. Like, this is just kind of the way of the world. Are you really worried about this? That's why it is important to, when they do attach their name to it, when it is coming from a phone number that they're not trying to hide, an email address that they're not trying to hide, a Facebook account that has their employer on it, all of that stuff, it's more concerning and feels a bit more unhinged.
Yeah, I was going to say some of the reason that we you don't get the reception that you'd like from cops is because so often cops are MAGA people. I mean, I haven't ever felt like someone ignored us because our particular take on politics, but we've certainly been ignored many times. And the other thing is we're going into an election cycle now, and it is absolutely sure to pick up because of what is taking place right now with Donald Trump. He's going to be ramping these people up, getting them closer and closer to a frenzied pace, saying the election is going to be rigged. I mean, he's already starting this, that the only way I'll lose is if it was rigged. Just wait until he actually loses. And these people who are true believers, they're going to be coming too. Mm-hmm. So, and it's, and look, again, it's not just us. It's David Pakman and really anybody in this space who butts up against and disagrees with the positions, the racism, the hatred, the violence, the anti-democratic positions, they're going to be targets too.
And I was going to say that if you are a woman, it's worse for you.
Yeah.
If you are a person of color, it's worse for you. So those political commentators also have it worse, where it's you're also getting the racist hatred. You're also getting the sexist hatred. So that adds an element where it's even more concerning. So, and like you said, Jesse, the fact that the election is coming up, and we have noticed that things start to pick up around that time. So say a prayer for us, if that's what you do.
You know what? Maybe we're wrong, though. Maybe plumbers at the end of the day sit around and go, man, how many death threats are you getting, bro?
I'm sure some people get mad about the plumbing and the the work that was done in their house, right? I don't know.
Well, the latest work we did in this studio space was add a desk. Do you see what I did there, Brittany Page?
Amazing segue.
That is a brilliant mastermind at work. Throw into the segue, go into the segue, throw into the ad. We did just get recently a new desk in studio from Uplift Standing Desk. And this portion of this program is sponsored by them. Here's an offer from Uplift Standing Desk. In this increasingly technological world that we live, we only seem to spend more time hunched over our gadgets. Legs pretzeled and twisted and backs arched, staring at the almighty screen. We are better than this. We need to stand up for ourselves, improve our bodies and our brains.
That's why Jesse and I changed to an Uplift Standing Desk. Standing while prepping the show has completely improved our efficiency by amplifying our focus and boosting the flow of ideas and blood circulation. Studies have shown using a standing desk can also increase your energy and lower your risk of disease. Your health and work deserve a raise.
Go to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt and use code IDoubtIt at checkout to get 5% off and take your fitness and productivity to new heights. You know, raising standing desk. With over 6,000 five-star Google reviews, we're not the only satisfied customers. The New York Times Wirecutter has chosen Uplift Desk as their standing desk of choice for 5 years running.
Since Uplift Desks are super stable, you can switch between sitting and standing configurations with the single tap of a button. And there's more than 100 desktop styles and tons of accessories to choose from, including 4 for free with every desk purchase. Uplift Desk also offers a 15-year warranty, free shipping, and free returns with free return shipping.
Are you ready to prioritize your health and productivity? Move more with Uplift Desk. Head to UpliftDesk.com/IDoubtIt or just click the link below to score 5% off of your first purchase when you use code IDoubtIt at checkout. Work better, live healthier with Uplift Desk. Thank you to Uplift Standing Desk for sponsoring a portion of today's episode. We appreciate it very much, and we would encourage you to support the show and check them out. Let's get to some listener communication. It is a time-honored, over 10 years we've been taking listener communications in the form of voicemails and emails. We've got some emails, but before we get to that, here is how you contact the show. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can always email a voice memo from your regular old smartphone to our regular old email address, or just a regular old email to idoubtit@dollamore.com.
Yes, we have an email from Ann G. And normally I have to set up the listener communication. What episode is it in reference to? What topic is it in reference to? Don't need to do that because Ann G is a professional and is letting us know exactly what this is in reference to. So hi, Brittany and Jesse, both on the I Doubt It podcast and the Dollamore Daily YouTube. I have heard you say that when talking about abortion rights, Joe Biden and probably others should say the word abortion and not use euphemisms or soften the issue by referring to reproductive health or reproductive freedom. I have a different take on this. I think there is one group of people who is lost. These are the folks who think embryos at the IVF clinics are children. No framing of the issue will reach them. Then there are those of us who believe that access to abortion should be unfettered for all, and we have no trouble with the word abortion or any language around abortion. There is no need to speak to this group with any particular words. We're already there. However, there may be people who do not fall into either one of those broad groups who may be uncertain or wishy-washy about this issue. Maybe they haven't thought much about abortion access and its complexity, or have begun to hear some of the horror stories wrought by draconian abortion bans. Some people may not like abortion or may have been raised to oppose it. I think Joe Biden is one of those people, and he has changed his position on it in opposition to his Catholic upbringing. People like this don't support abortion exactly. However, they may understand the issue as one of freedom that they can and will support. Framing the abortion as an issue of freedom can broaden the base of support for reproductive freedom / abortion, especially if it is tied to Republican efforts to come after your freedoms one by one. First abortion, next IVF, next birth control, then no-fault divorce, then LGBTQ rights. Real conservatives should be able to understand the desire to keep government out of the doctor's offices and bedrooms. I think Joe Biden and the Democrats should keep emphasizing the freedom aspect of reproductive rights, even if some of them can't bring themselves to say the word abortion. Second, on this point, I would like to see more men getting up in front of legislatures and being interviewed by news organizations in support of abortion. It seems like it is always a woman in the interview chair. Of course, it is a woman who will bravely stand up and say, "I had an abortion," or "I almost died because I needed an abortion and couldn't get one." But generally, the supporting cast, such as the doctor or the lawyer, the advocate, are women. I think having more men involved in interviews and expert testimony would increase the reach and effectiveness of the movement to strengthen reproductive rights. Some men who quickly tune out women, especially when it involves women's issues, may be tempted to listen just a minute longer if it is a man discussing the issue. It pains me to say this as I feel like I am supporting the increasingly overt misogyny in society, and I hate that, but reproductive rights are so important that I think we must throw everything we can at it, even if it makes us cringe at the unfairness of the whole thing. That being said, the covert and increasingly overt misogyny in the U.S. today is very alarming. Listen, I lived through the 50s and 60s, and high school girls couldn't play sports because the boys needed the gym and the fields. Family resources went to supporting the boys' extracurricular activities and wishes and dreams. Boys were expected to sow their wild oats, but girls who had sex were sluts. Who did they think the boys were sowing their oats with? Abortion was illegal. Women could not get a credit card on their own until 1974. The thought of returning to those times makes it hard for me to breathe. And you have Charlie Kirk, born in the 80s, saying we should return to those times because they were so much better. Many pundits say that their children and grandparents watch Fox News all day and are ultra-conservatives who want to return to a simpler time. I am a 75-year-old woman. I was in the San Francisco Peace March and demonstrated to end the Vietnam War. I marched for civil rights and abortion rights. Surely I cannot be the only one of my vintage appalled and alarmed at the state of this society. Where, oh, where are my people? Thanks for all that you do. Keep up the great work and the conversation. Ann G.
Ann G. I like referring to yourself as your vintage. Well, I don't. I'm struggling to find the pushback on Joe Biden's lack of the use of the word abortion. Like, I don't, like she said, we should not, but then didn't give any, it didn't feel like there was a, like a substantive argument for him not saying it, other than it might make some people squeamish, I guess.
No, I think the argument is that if they keep emphasizing reproductive freedom, then people will be convinced by the freedom aspect of it.
Oh,
people
I
who
see.
Are uncomfortable with the word abortion, who are uncomfortable with the act of having an abortion, and is making the argument, I think, that if they continue to use the freedom aspect, reproductive freedom, that those people can be reached.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, that very well could be the case. I think given the multitude of different examples from, like, we read on a few episodes ago of the woman who is absolutely pro-choice in no uncertain terms, but thought she was going to vote for Donald Trump because Roe v. Wade fell on Biden's watch. She thought that it was because of Joe Biden. She's not an outlier. I think that there's, in my estimation, knowing as much as I know about politics and having been involved with voters and just issues as long as I have, in, you know, my vintage is not quite as old as yours, Anne, that there is a never-ending supply of people who are not plugged in enough who do believe that it's Joe Biden who is anti-abortion. And then when you hear him say things about how he is, I don't want abortion on demand, and these weird right-wing adjacent talking points that he uses, it's not helping the issue. It's certainly not helping the people on the front lines of abortion providers and abortion activists. So I disagree. I think that there's too many consultants in the kitchen with Joe Biden, or they're letting him do what's comfortable for him rather than what's good for the electorate and the American people. Because let's keep in mind, everybody should know this already, there are bigger things at stake than Joe Biden's comfort level with the words that he uses. There are, you know, 150 plus million women out there who are impacted by the language and his comfort level, or lack thereof.
Yeah, so I thought Anne made a good point here. I think that my response to the reproductive health, reproductive freedom versus abortion language is, why not both?
Yeah.
You know, I think he can do both. I think the administration can use both. And right now, it has been almost exclusively reproductive health or reproductive freedom. And that sends a message. And so I think doing both, right? Using the word abortion sometimes, using the word reproductive freedom in order to emphasize that freedom element, which I do think is important. I also want to touch on the second point that Anne made about men getting out in front of legislatures and being interviewed by news organizations in support of abortion. And absolutely, I think the problem here stems from the fact that we have always put the onus on women to take birth control to ensure that they're not getting pregnant. There is not a birth control for men still, like a pill that they can take, you know?
Only because of lack of research and funding for that.
Yeah,
that's,
and so
it. I mean, they fixed limp boners right away, but birth control for men, not so available.
And so we would love that, because men are also impacted by unwanted pregnancies. Men also have to reorganize their life around a pregnancy that they didn't expect, or that is going to put strain and stress on their life. So this is obviously a situation that requires two people to come together to create a baby. And oftentimes we're just hearing from the woman when we should be hearing from the other party.
Yeah.
So I definitely agree with Anne on that. And I think, you know, Anne always writes in thoughtful emails that make us think, and we definitely appreciate that too.
Absolutely. We appreciate it very much. Moving on, we have another email. I think it's a question this time.
It is from a Patreon supporter, Nico. Is this the perfect time for the non-MAGA Republicans in the House and Senate to break off into a third party? Instead of quitting, they can become a new party. The RNC is now the MAGA Party fundraising headquarters. It would give the Dems the majority, but the Trump Party took over the Republican Party. So call the Republicans something else and make the Trump racist party the minority, like they are. but I'm a stoner who installs floors and relies on spell check. Is this a pipe dream?
So my first question would be, when you get after work, when you go out with your buddies, your floor installation buddies, are you talking about your death threats, Nico? No. Listen, I hear this a lot, and I think that this is a failure of the media who play up how many non-MAGA Republicans there are in the House and Senate. Who are these non-MAGA Republicans? Can someone fucking name one for me? Can someone put their finger on a non-MAGA Republican elected official in the House or Senate? Because I can't think of one.
Do you mean one that's like not also going to run for re-election again? Because you could name people who have started to give some criticism of Donald Trump and distance themselves.
Like your
themselves.
Ken Bucks, and then they're out? They peace out?
Oh, and that's what Mitt Romney, yeah. Who's not running again. Right. Like I think making your question more specific, can you name one that is going to try to run for re-election? That is like staying in a position of power.
Well, that's the problem. And there has been the takeover of the Republican Party by the Trump family, Donald Trump and his Nepo kids, is complete. His daughter-in-law is now the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. Don Jr. most certainly has policy and strategy input. So does Eric, because his wife is the co-chair. It is just... Let me just answer the question on its face, I guess. I don't believe there's any efficacy whatsoever because of the number and the lack of numbers of non-MAGA Republicans. You would need at least roughly 50-50 to make any difference at all in an election, other than having a spoiler of an election, and that those numbers just don't exist. So I'd love to see it, of course. I'm not of the opinion that we need a strong Republican Party like Nancy Pelosi. We need a dead Republican Party. We need one that's on its way out the door, which is what we have now. It's just going to take probably just shy of a full generation for that death to come to pass.
Well, and we're also seeing with the third party stuff, the no labels party, where I think they're trying to build themselves as a moderate, and their ideal ticket, they say, is a Republican president and a Republican presidential candidate and a vice presidential candidate who's a Democrat.
Right, which is all that it serves is to siphon off votes from Joe Biden in a general and give Donald Trump a better shot at actually winning.
And luckily, they can't find anyone to... No one wants to run for president in the no labels party, so it's not working out very well. As we see, is often the case with these these attempts with third party.
Right.
It's difficult.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Good question from Nico. Thank you for that. And thank you for your Patreon support. We have another question, or just comment, I guess, here from a Patreon supporter. This is Azag Sloth.
All right.
Way cool you guys are going to be in Raleigh. Unless something unexpected happens, I'll make the 2.5-hour trek from Charlotte. Very
nice.
Exciting. This is, of course, in reference. Should have set this one up. This is in reference to our speaking event that we are going to be appearing at the Triangle Freethought Society on Saturday, April 6th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. We are going to put this information in the description in the show notes, so you can look for it there. So I'm not listing off the address and where we're going to be, our assassination coordinates, as it were, if you're Elon Musk. So that's awesome. We will look forward to seeing anyone there who wants to show up. It's free. Anyone can come. So
I love that we start the episode talking about getting death threats.
I know.
And then we're ending the listener communication segment talking about exactly where we're going to be, the space-time coordinates of our where we'll be. So that's fantastic. Thank you guys for the listener communication again. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can always email a voice memo or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Let's thank our Patreon supporters. If you would like to help support this work, if you want to help support this show, keep the many lights on in this studio, you can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast and help support our work there.
Thank you to our new Patreon supporters, Chris S.
Chris S.
Nanette S.
Nanette S.
Bumblebee Whisperer.
Bumblebee Whisperer.
Whisperer.
All right.
Anna D.
Anna D.
Betsy L.
Betsy L.
Brad Gunner SGT.
Brad Gunner SGT. Is that Gunner, Gunnery Sergeant? Is it Gunner or Gunnery?
It says Gunner.
Gunner. All right.
David D.
David D.
Red Devil 70.
Red Devil 70.
Brent Hall 393.
Brent Hall 393.
Jesus DLC.
Jesus or Jesus DLC.
Deep Blur Rider.
Deep Blue Rider?
Well, the blue doesn't have an E on it.
Oh.
So.
Deep Blue Rider.
All right.
It's usernames, man.
Cassandra S.
Cassandra S.
Yeah, and it's tough to know what to do here because so we usually do the first name and then the last letter. That's if someone writes their first and last name. But if someone's putting everything like in a username,
yeah,
then
yeah. You and I both have the problem of trying to read like personalized license plates.
Yeah, I can't do that.
I sometimes we'll be sitting at a stoplight and you're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to figure out what this means.
Yeah, it's impossible. It's impossible. So again, thank you to our Patreon supporters. One of the main perks of Patreon is that you get access to the ad-free show. You get to listen to it on whatever podcatcher you choose by accessing the RSS feed link through Patreon, and it's ad-free. You don't have to hear any of the ads, no ads. And then you also get access to our monthly bonus episode that we do, which tends to be not about politics, tends to be about other things, and you get to comment on the episodes, engage with the people that are also Patreon supporters, and engage with that community. So if you want to become a Patreon supporter, patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast, and we very much appreciate your support.
Stalemocracy, facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So it's not every story that we get positive news specifically related to the police. And we got some positive news in the way of consequences.
Yeah.
For six police officers that we talked about last year. This is the Mississippi cops that called themselves the Goon Squad. And you may remember this story from last year because we talked about it. It was the case of these six deputies in Rankin County, Mississippi, who broke into the home of two black men, Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker. They tased them. They threatened to rape them. They put a gun in the mouth of one of the victims in Michael Jenkins's mouth, and they say that they didn't realize a bullet was in the chamber and pulled the trigger, and he was injured because there was a bullet in the chamber. They were called themselves the Goon Squad because they paraded around town targeting people and torturing them.
Yeah, just absolutely terrible, terrible.
And according to this reporting, The Goon Squad was operating for like nearly two decades. They would, again, target people, barge into their homes, pull them over, handcuff them, torture them. I mean, it was really sadistic, gross stuff. And finally, we have some consequences in the form of them actually being charged, prosecuted, and sentenced for these crimes. And they got different sentences depending on what their level of involvement was in this particular case. And the sentences ranged from like 10, 27 to 40 years in prison.
Even after the former officers received extensive sentences, their legal troubles aren't over.
A $400 million civil rights lawsuit filed by attorney Trent Walker on behalf of Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker now hangs over the heads of the Rankin County Sheriff's Department and the six former officers for their roles in the brutal attacks and torture of Jenkins and Parker.
No trial and sentences that are this serious and no occurrences that are this serious we could allow the sheriff to remain in power.
Exactly.
Okay, and so who must be removed?
Lion Brian Bailey.
activist and attorney Malik Shabazz on the steps of the federal courthouse Thursday, calling out Rankin County Sheriff Brian Bailey and his department. They say justice starts and ends with the department because the former deputies were under Bailey's supervision. They're calling for him to be held accountable.
There are many layers of corruption in Rankin County.
That's right.
And I'm praying that the United States Department of Justice will continue to investigate.
In court this week, the defense attorney for Daniel Updike agreed the officers adapted to the culture of the department, suggesting the willingness to use excessive force used by the deputies, nicknamed the Goon Squad, was accepted and taught.
How often does the leader of an organization not know what one of his first lieutenants is doing?
Attorney Trent Walker tells us the sheriff's department has filed a motion to dismiss the civil lawsuit. They're now waiting for a judge to rule on this motion. After the ruling, Walker says they will be ready to proceed as needed. The former officers are expected to be sentenced on a state level next month. We did reach out to Brian Bailey for comment, and he hasn't responded back just yet. For now, I'm live in at Rankin County, Kennedy Cooper 16, WABT News.
So here's the age-old problem that we face relative to these types of abuses. This gross, insane story is that it's always incumbent upon the federal government, the Department of Justice, to bring civil rights charges against these monsters, and never the local police. In fact, in this case, as they just reported, the sheriff's department, rather than protecting and serving and trying to implement justice, they're trying to get the civil rights lawsuit dismissed. They're not in it for the administration of justice. They're here to protect the abusers and protect the department that held these abusers and employed these abusers and trained these abusers and allowed these abusers to abuse. It just, especially in Mississippi, in the Deep South, this kind of culture it must be rooted out, because it just disgusting, absolutely disgusting.
Yeah, and You're touching on something important, which is what you heard in the clip, that Sheriff Brian Bailey of Rankin County, he's at the top of this. And when you look at reporting that says the Goon Squad was operating for around two decades, that means that they were going around.
Not these particular cops. It's generations of different cops.
Right. There's been a legacy of this type of violence in this police department. And you're talking about people that would band together, call themselves the Goon Squad, agree to participate in this kind of behavior where they would target people, torture them, waterboard them, put guns in their mouth, abuse them with rape them with sex toys. This is the kind of thing that was happening, and the sheriff is at the top. Nothing's been done about him yet, but there is starting to be more of a microscope on him, because as the reporting has continued, many people have said that they experienced the violence at the hands of a member of the Goon Squad, and they filed a formal complaint on those instances, and only a few said that they were actually contacted by the sheriff. And so there's now increased scrutiny on the sheriff. And we saw this when one of the reporters who broke this story, Brian Howie of Mississippi Today, sat down with John Yang over on PBS.
Well, we don't know how many cases there are out there, but we interviewed over 50 people who claimed they experienced or witnessed torture at the hands of Rankin County deputies. Of those, we were able to corroborate 17 torture incidents involving 20 victims dating back 18 years.
The sheriff is resisting calls to resign. How high up did knowledge about this go? How senior supervisors were aware of this?
You're right, John. The sheriff has resisted calls to resign and has claimed numerous times that he had no knowledge of his deputy's actions. But what we found were that some of the highest ranking deputies at the sheriff's department were involved and actively partaking in these torture incidents. And we spoke to multiple people who claimed they were tortured by deputies, who said that they filed complaints with the department, which should have gone to the sheriff, and and in some cases even reached out directly to him to notify him of his deputy's actions.
What does this say about the culture of the department?
Well, it says that there's potentially a deeply ingrained culture of violent misconduct at the Rankin County Sheriff's Department. This culture has actually been referenced several times in the sentencing hearings this week by some of the deputies themselves, who themselves acknowledged that they were indoctrinated into this culture and became a part of it as they went on at the Sheriff's Department.
The Rankin County is majority white. It sits right next to Jackson, which has one of the highest percentages of black population of any good-sized city in America. To what extent is there a racial dimension to this?
We found that the majority of the alleged victims who were tortured by Goon Squad members were actually white, and we think that that's because we are looking at a majority white county. However, when people of color came forward and said that they were tortured, there was often a racial aspect to the torture. They were called racial slurs. They were told to go back to Jackson, which is a common phrase, referring to Jackson and how many people at the department and in Rankin County see the city as a source of crime and corruption.
Do you think this is going on in other counties in Mississippi?
It's hard to say. We do know that across Mississippi, sheriff's departments have very little to no oversight. Our team, Alyssa Daly and Jerry Mitchell, have uncovered other accusations of sexual assault by sheriffs at different departments. And so it's clear here that we have an issue of accountability with sheriffs generally in Mississippi.
Not just in Mississippi. I mean, John Oliver did a piece about sheriffs back in 2020 that everyone needs to watch. If we remember, we'll link it below. If not, just search on YouTube, sheriffs and John Oliver. Look, I know they need, he's a reporter. He needs to be working on facts and evidence to make a statement. But I did chuckle. I don't know if I did it out loud when they said, is this happening elsewhere? And he says, well, it's hard to say. No, it's not. No, it's not. This absolutely is happening because it continues to happen, not just in Mississippi, but all across the country with cops who feel emboldened in their authority, in their ability to abuse citizens under the color of law. That's why the hefty prison sentences have come down and, you know, 40 years, decades in prison for their abusing citizens while under color of their job as an armed agent of the state.
Yeah, and that's why I really liked a statement from the lead attorney that's representing the victims, Michael Jenkins and Parker, where Malik Shabazz is the name of the attorney, and they said, quote, the 40-year prison sentence given to Goon Squad member Christian Dedman by Judge Thomas Lee for the sick and serious crimes committed against our clients, Michael Jenkins and Eddie Parker, made history today. All of these Goon Squad sentences are sending a serious message to all rogue police and other Goon Squads all over America that justice is coming for you. And again, it's a shame that this is such a rare thing where a police officer is caught doing something they shouldn't be doing, something illegal, and that they actually receive consequences for that. But that's why this is so important to talk about. And I hope other cops who are out there on their own Goon Squad see that and maybe question, oh God, am I going to get busted for this? Should I maybe stop terrorizing people? Should I stop torturing people in my position? I mean, I don't know that they're, you know, capable of having that level of self-interrogation, but I can hope, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, these charges are serious. It's civil rights, conspiracy, deprivation of rights under color of law, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and obstruction of justice. This is what you would expect from a criminal, not a police officer. Someone, it's the same thing, and this is a far lesser degree, but it's the cop who never uses his turn signal and then pulls people over for not using their turn signal. A guy who speeds and then who drives drunk. It's just, they feel emboldened because they are never checked. We do have a culture. The other thing in the package that grated on me is that people are listening to these other cops say, oh, I was indoctrinated into this culture. No, you weren't. You are participating in what is absolutely lawless behavior and abusing American citizens and violating your oath to the Constitution of the United States. It's just disgusting.
Well, it's also sickening. It's convenient that when they want to save their own ass and try to get a reduced sentence by blaming it on the culture within the police department, they're never willing to admit, the police, that there's a problem with the culture of police departments where they can't tell on their fellow officers when they are violating people's rights. They never want to admit those things, that it is systemic, right? That the problem within policing is systemic. They never want to admit that until, oh, they're in court, and then they want to explain their behavior so that they can possibly get a reduced sentence.
Yeah. Absolutely. Look, we'd love to know what you think about this. We're going to keep following this case to see if there are local or state charges. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollemore.com.
Just a little addition to that, when they get sentenced on their state charges, because there are the state charges, they're just awaiting the sentencing.
Yeah.
So one thing we've been talking a lot about is Gaza and the ongoing genocide and the differences between the Donald Trump administration on what this would be and the Biden administration. And we've had a lot of listener communication about people that are unhappy with how much we've criticized Joe Biden's approach. There's people that want us to just completely support Joe Biden's approach and quit criticizing him in an election year. So it's hard to please everybody, but we're getting more evidence on what the differences are between the two administrations' approaches, specifically with Jared Kushner. Now, we all remember Jared Kushner.
Unfortunately, that is true. We do all remember Jared Kushner.
Well, and here's the reason you remember him is that he was the senior foreign policy advisor under Donald Trump's presidency. And his job was to prepare a peace plan for the Middle East. It's not because he's Donald Trump's son-in-law.
Yeah. He was the architect of the Middle East peace that Donald Trump brought to the world. Remember the Abraham Accords. Donald Trump, he gave us peace in the Middle East. I don't know what happened to it. Apparently, it was very short-lived. But it was because of Donald Trump and Jared Kushner.
Yeah. Can we also just say that we went to dinner with friends, and we were at a restaurant here.
Breaking news, everyone. We have friends.
And we went to Georgetown, and...
Oh, yeah.
We were at this restaurant, and it was recommended by our friends, and we ate there, and it was not great.
Il Canale.
All right.
Ilcanale. A terrible place in Georgetown.
So
the pizza was like pizza-flavored wet socks.
Okay. What ended up happening, though, more important than the food not being great. So we weren't happy with the experience. We're leaving. We're like, we're never going to come back to this place. We're going down the stairs. And as you're leaving the restaurant, there's a massive poster. And I don't even remember what was on it now, because all I saw was the word Trump. And then I think it was Jared Kushner was like with the restaurant owner or something.
And I think Ivanka was in the picture too.
And they had this
like a shrine,
homage,
like an homage.
Yeah. To Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump eating at this restaurant. And I just said, Trump? Like, I was like, what? What is this? What place did you take us to? I couldn't believe it. So that's just an aside about Jared Kushner. He was also on this poster.
He was all up in our face the other night.
So he sat down.
You got to warn a fella before you throw Jared Kushner and Ivanka right into his face as he walked. I could have tumbled down the stairs to my death.
It was shocking. So Jared Kushner recently sat down for an interview on the YouTube channel of the Middle East Initiative, a program of Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and he gave his thoughts on the current war in Gaza.
I mean, you know, obviously the reason they're not, you know, for example, the reason the Egyptians don't want to take the refugees, in addition to, of course, there being the domestic unrest that could result, or the instability that could result. But also there are real fears on the part of Arabs, and I'm sure you talk to a lot of them, who think once Gazans leave Gaza, Netanyahu's never going to let them back in.
Maybe, but I'm not sure there's much left of Gaza at this point. So, you know, if you think about even the construct, like, you know, Gaza was not really a historical precedent, right? It was the result of a war right? You had tribes that were in different places, but then Gaza became a thing. Egypt, you know, used to run it. And then, you know, over time, you had different governments that came in different ways. So you have another war. You know, usually when wars happen, you know, borders are changed historically over time. And so my sense is I would say, how do we deal with the terror threat that is there so that it cannot be a threat to Israel or to Egypt, right? I think that both sides are spending a fortune on military. I think neither side really wants to have, you know, a terrorist organization enclaved right between them. And Gaza's waterfront property, it could be very valuable to if people would focus on kind of building up, you know, livelihoods. You think about all the money that's gone into this tunnel network and into all the munitions, if that would have gone into education or innovation, what could have been done? And so I think that it's a little bit of an unfortunate situation there. But I think from Israel's perspective, I would do my best to move the people out and then clean it up. But I don't think that Israel has stated that they don't want the people to move back there afterwards.
Move them out. To where, Jared? To where? To non-waterfront property that's valuable, that can be juiced up into to more money for you and your father-in-law, Jared? Not much left there, he says with his jokey little giggle.
It is disturbing to hear how callous he is.
Yeah.
And maybe it's just the media that I consume and the things that I've been reading, but I am attached to these stories where, you know, I'll be scrolling through my Instagram and I follow The New Yorker, and they just did an article about the kids in Gaza who have lost limbs, and how because the hospitals are no longer in operation, they've been bombed, that these kids are losing their limbs where otherwise they wouldn't have to lose their limbs if they could go to the hospital and be treated right away. And I read the story of this girl who lost her leg, and she sometimes gets out of bed and forgets that she doesn't have a leg and falls.
Wow.
And I don't know what Jared Kushner is reading and what he's following, given his status as a former senior foreign policy advisor. But he knows what's happening. He knows that more than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed. He knows that there is global concern about a famine in Gaza. He knows that aid trucks are not getting in. He knows what's happening to the people who live there. And so to callously say, yeah, I don't know if they're going to be let in. I don't know. There's nothing really left of it at this point. To just have this flagrant disregard of human beings that are suffering is remarkable. And this is exactly the type of person that shouldn't be anywhere near power, should not be on our House of Power, should not be a decision maker on what impacts people, because you can tell that he doesn't care.
Not only does he not care, he's predicating foreign policy decisions based on real estate value in that particular area. They did the same thing with Kim Jong-un. They were trying to develop land in India and different hotels around the world, all while Donald Trump was president, and increasing the value of his brand. I mean, it's just what they do.
Yeah, in fact, we have a clip of that. Donald Trump, that was in 2018, where this was after a meeting with Kim Jong-un, where he started talking about how there's great condos and great beaches in North Korea.
They have great beaches. You see that whenever they're exploding their cannons into the ocean, right? So I said, boy, look at that. Wouldn't that make a great condo behind? And I explained, I said, you know, instead of doing that, you could have the best hotels in the world right there. Think of it from a real estate perspective. You have South Korea, you have China, and they own the land in the middle. How bad is that?
That's it.
Instead of exploding your nukes, think of how great the beachfront property is. There could be condos there. Yeah, but Kim Jong-un is there, and he's going to explode the bombs.
Yeah, but he's Kim Jong-un who sends Donald Trump love letters, and they had a love affair, and those are all things Donald Trump has said. It's
just a strange way to view your role in international relations, like diplomacy exclusively through what you can like sell or what the property is.
Yeah.
Can't think beyond their own skill set.
It's also, you know, tell me more about, I'm not going to vote for the lesser of two evils. Joe Biden is also evil. Is he? Is it this kind of like, oh, what about that waterfront property? Not much left to Gaza. I don't know why they'd want to go back. Yuck, yuck, yuck. Come on. let's be honest with ourselves. Let's deal with reality on the terms that reality has set, that Donald Trump, another Donald Trump administration, would be nothing but a deliverer of horrors to the people of Gaza in a way that maybe they haven't even seen yet. Disgusting. Absolutely disgusting. More disgusting from the Republican Party is this Jim Jordan interview on CNN with Leslie Stahl.
60
this last
minutes.
Week. Yeah, what did I say?
CNN.
60 minutes. One, the media needs to do a better job of vetting who they talk to and how they do it. Because let's remember, this is the same Leslie Stahl. There's only one Leslie Stahl. But this is the same Leslie Stahl that just months ago interviewed Marjorie Taylor Greene and allowed her to spew vile conspiracy theories about all Democrats being pedophiles and shit like that. But she sat down with Jim Jordan, and it was pretty weird, right?
Yeah, they're giving this... She's talking about this divide where there's a debate where people want social media to do something about the misinformation that is spreading online. They want there to be warnings about misinformation. They want the misinformation to be removed. They think it should be removed. And then you have conservatives, Republicans, right, who say, actually, it should stay up.
Well, I was gonna say... Let everybody just guess where Jim Jordan comes down. Is he on the side of misinformation, or is he wanting it to be combated? No, but go ahead.
And he says that it's a First Amendment issue.
The conservatives' campaign faced a setback at the Supreme Court on Monday when a majority of the justices seemed poised to reject their effort to limit attempts by the government to influence social media. The court is deciding in separate cases whether the platforms are like news organizations with a First Amendment right to control who and what information appears on their sites. Congressman Jordan argues that the tech companies shouldn't remove most of what they call misinformation.
I think you let the American people respect the American people, their common sense, to figure out what's accurate, what isn't.
Well, what about this idea that the 2020 election was stolen? You think that these companies should allow people to say that? And individuals can make up their own mind, and that there should be...
I think the American people are smart. Look, I've not said that. What I've said is there were concerns about the 2020 election. I think Americans agree with that.
No, they don't.
You don't think they think there were concerns with the 2020 election?
Most people don't question the result. That's all I'm saying. They don't question whether Biden won or not. Right?
Yikes.
Right. Most people don't question the outcome.
Right.
X basically did what Jordan proposes. After Elon Musk took over in 2022, most of its fact checkers were fired. Now the site is rife with trash talk and lies. Little would you know that this, said to be footage from Gaza, is really from a video game. Eventually, X users added a warning label. In this post, pictures of real babies killed in Israeli strikes are falsely dismissed as dolls.
The toothpaste is out of the tube, and we have to figure out how to deal with the resulting mess.
And that, I think, says a lot, because if you have been on Twitter lately, it's an absolute nightmare. It's a cesspool. A lot of people have said it's not even usable at this point, because Elon Musk created a system where, rather than being a notable figure, and that was the primary criteria to get a blue check, anyone can buy a blue check, and a lot of them are Elon fanboys. And so,
and along with a blue check comes priority in feeds where their nonsense, their lies, their fanboy bullshit goes right to the top of the replies and on tweets.
Yeah, I was just going to say that when you go to a reply, that it is filled with, because blue checks go to the top, and then it's hateful comment, hateful comment, hateful comment, rather than useful comment, useful comment, useful comment. And Jim Jordan says we should trust the American people. We should trust the American people to figure out what's true and what's not, says the seasoned liar who goes on Fox News that airs lies all day long and just lies, 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 lies. Of course he doesn't want these companies to issue fact checks to remove content, because then that makes his ability to lie to the American people more difficult, and it, you know, sends him over to Fox News, and that's the only way that he can get his information to the American people.
The other thing is the vicious cycle of, well, you know, a lot of people had questions about the 2020 election. They did, huh? I wonder why. Who,
right.
Who created them having concerns about the integrity of the 2020 election, Jim? Was it Donald Trump and him leading up to the election, talking about how it's if I lose, it's going to be rigged? And then once he did lose, oh, it was rigged? I wonder why they think that. And it's because there weren't enough guardrails in place to the misinformation and the lies and the propaganda and the attempts to end democracy in America. I mean, this is one of the cases where we are going to play this clip. 60 Minutes is notorious for demonetizing, so we're going to get around it on YouTube by just playing, as you just watched, just still images over the audio. Otherwise, there is no pushback on this. If they don't do a good enough job, we wouldn't be able to critique because of the fact that they're so notorious for how they treat copyright nonsense. So.
Yeah, and this is also, we've been talking about how Meta is rolling out limiting political content and
right.
how that's going to impact political creators. And Instagram this week actually implemented the limiting of political content, and they set it as the default. So everyone's account defaults to limiting political content unless you go into your own settings on Instagram and say that you do not want political content to be limited. So
I didn't know that. I'll have to go in there and do it for my own.
Yeah, be aware of that. And we'll post in the stories on I Doubt It Instagram how to go in and actually change that setting.
Yeah,
if they
yeah.
even let you see that. I don't know.
So the other thing that's happening right now, actually, we want to hear from you on that story. 657-464-7609. And of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone or a regular email to idoubtit@dollemore.com. What is next?
Donald Trump is, I guess, having some wins in court, which is unfortunate, but he is still, his attorneys are in court today for specifically the hush money case. And it there has been a date scheduled. So the New York judge scheduled an April 15th trial date for Donald Trump's hush money case. But some controversy happened in the courtroom because Donald Trump's attorneys accused the prosecutors in this case of essentially prosecutorial misconduct.
We're getting live updates from inside the courtroom, and it's actually getting quite testy in there, where the judge has just raised his voice for the first time as he is pressing Trump's legal team about what is a pretty extraordinary allegation that they are making against the district attorney's office.
That's right. They have accused the district attorney's office of professional misconduct, prosecutorial misconduct. They've even suggested that they should be sanctioned. And the judge said, look, that's a, quote, incredibly serious, unbelievably serious accusation. Not only are you accusing the prosecutor's office of misconduct, but you're also trying to make me, the judge, complicit in it. And he pressed the Trump legal team to come up with some case law, some specifics to support this allegation. Because the reason we're here today for this hearing and not for the first day of the trial is that federal prosecutors handed over hundred thousand documents. Now, that was not the Manhattan district attorney that did that. Those are federal prosecutors. So the judge here is pressing the Trump attorneys on why you can accuse the Manhattan District Attorney's Office of prosecutorial misconduct because the Justice Department didn't hand something over. Now, the Trump attorneys argue that the district attorney's office should have pushed for these documents themselves. They should have asked for these specific materials, and they're having a pretty intense exchange now with the judge. Now, again, this is the first time the judge has really raised his voice, saying the fact that they don't even have any case law to support this very serious accusation is, quote, really disconcerting. So our colleagues tell us that the judge, Judge Juan Merchan, he has been pretty level throughout the hearing, but he's gotten a lot more animated. And it's interesting because this shows that he is not going to tolerate just these throwaway accusations that someone is corrupt, right, or that they're engaging in misconduct. And he is holding their feet to the fire, asking for actual proof, support, case law for this accusation. So this is significant and maybe a preview of how the judge will handle this trial.
So this shows also that the tactics that Donald Trump uses on social media, on the campaign trail, the lies that he gets to spew, the radical takes that he has, that doesn't work in court. And so his attorneys can try to say, you know, they're engaging in prosecutorial misconduct. They didn't get us all these documents in time. And then the judge is like, well, if you had a problem here, you should have come and said that you had a problem before now.
Right.
And he's not going to let them get away with these attempts to delay, because that's all that they're doing. They, as much as possible, want to try to delay these cases from starting.
It's nice to hear that the judge is getting aggressive enough to raise his voice, demanding evidence. If you're going to make a claim, you got to bring evidence. You can't just come and run your mouth making accusations without doing so. Donald Trump did get a pretty big gift from the New York State Appellate Court today.
Yeah.
He was given 10 extra days to come up with the bond, and that bond is no longer $474 million. It is now, because of the gift they gave him, $175 billion.
Well, Vlad and Chanel, this is a significant win, you could call it, for former President Trump, although it just grants him a bit more breathing room and it reduces the amount of money he would need to put up as he continues to insist that he's innocent. Just to recap for everyone, this is the civil fraud trial which claimed that the Trump Organization, that's Donald Trump, his sons Eric and Don Jr., as well as Alan Weisselberg and others, inaccurately and fraudulently submitted documents, banking statements as it relates to Donald Trump's net worth and the value of his properties. We all know Trump Tower. It includes 40 Wall Street and many others as well. Now, a judge already ruled that over the course of many years, Trump and his associates had overestimated their value by the billions, almost $2 billion. And in the judgment was that former President Trump had to pay at least $460 million by today in order to continue his appeal. Now, what's just happened here in the last few moments is that a New York appeals court has granted Trump's request to stay that judgment, meaning pause it, put it on hold as he continues, and he's already communicated this publicly, to struggle to get the cash on hand or to get surety companies, which facilitate getting the cash on hand for him. They now, this New York appeals court, has reduced the amount that Trump would need to put up from $464 million down to $175 million, and they've given him now a week plus 10 more days to give that money over to the state effectively as he continues his appeal. So all of that unfolding in just the last few minutes, and separately behind me, the courthouse behind me, is where a judge is listening to both legal teams as it relates to a hush money payment from Donald Trump to a pornographic actress before the 2016 election. So that's what's just unfolded here, Vlad and Chanel, in just the last few minutes.
So this is just another case of a rich white dude with a bunch of power and a bunch of access to power and a bunch of money being given a second chance, being treated differently than anybody else in the criminal justice system. When he's talking about giving Donald Trump breathing room, it's not just a time breathing room that they're giving him. It is the amount of the bond, which means he has to put up less, which means it's increasing his chances of securing a bond from a surety company, from an insurance company, from a bond company. It gives him a lot more ability to work within a framework that shouldn't be given to him.
Absolutely.
He's committed a bunch of crimes. He's been found liable for the fraud. And now they're just like, oh, but let's give him as much time and as much benefit of the doubt as we can. And why? He has not proven himself worthy of that second chance.
And that's what's frustrating, because Attorney General Letitia James was set to start seizing his assets today.
Right.
Because he can't come up with the money. And no one else would be given this kind of leeway or consideration. And you even have people arguing, to be expected, that this is a win for Trump if you start seizing his assets, that it's only going to help him in the election. It's like, you know, listen, there's right and wrong, and there's being held accountable And that should happen, regardless of what you think the impact is going to be on his MAGA supporters. He needs to be held accountable. This is the judgment. This is how things go when you are, you know, in this situation. And he should face the consequences. So it is a bummer that it's another win for him. But as you just heard that laid out, like he's standing in front of the courtroom, that reporter talking about how his attorneys are in there for an unrelated case to what he's talking about right now.
Right.
It's the hush
just
money.
Another case they're dealing with.
Right, the hush money trial, and what a remarkable situation we're in that this is the Republican presidential candidate who is trying to juggle his various court appearances, trying to come up with the money for his bond, worried about getting his properties seized. I mean, is anyone else like just in shock that we're in this position? It's wild.
That Donald Trump is the worst of the two evils, not the lesser. Anyway, we'd love to know what you think. All jokes aside, 657-464-7609 is our voicemail number. You can leave a brief, fewer than 3-minute voicemail there. You can also email a voice memo or a regular old-fashioned email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Moving on.
Taking care of biz. Arizona State Senator Ava Birch.
Ava Birch.
Ava Birch is taking care of biz because she took to the Senate floor in Arizona and talked about an experience that she had where she found herself in need of an abortion and what it took for her to go through the process of obtaining an abortion in a state like Arizona, in a red state that is dominated by Republicans in Arizona.
But 2 years ago, while I was campaigning for this Senate seat, I became pregnant with what we later determined was a non-viable pregnancy. It was a pregnancy that we had been trying for, and we were heartbroken over it. But now, I wish I could tell you otherwise, but after numerous ultrasounds and blood draws, we have determined that my pregnancy is once again not progressing and is not viable. And once again, I have scheduled an appointment to terminate my pregnancy. I don't think people should have to justify their abortions, but I'm choosing to talk about why I made this decision because I want us to be able to have meaningful conversations about the reality of how the work that we do in this body impacts people in the real world. For the last 12 years, I have worked both as an ER nurse and a nurse practitioner in a women's health clinic, and that experience informs the understanding that I have of my situation. Pregnancy, intended or otherwise, increases your risk for just about every health problem that a person can have, and that includes diabetes and high blood pressure and blood clots, anxiety, depression, arrhythmias, ischemic stroke, and I could go on. Pregnancy is not a health neutral condition. Certainly, pregnancy carries more risk than abortion, which is a very low risk procedure. And I say this not to try to discourage people from pregnancy. I'm so glad that I accepted those risks and carried my children. I just recognize them because I think we have to be honest about the balance of risk and reward and why abortion can often be the right healthcare choice. I don't know how many of you have been unfortunate enough to experience a miscarriage before, but I am not interested in going through it unnecessarily. And right now, the safest and most appropriate treatment for me and the treatment that I choose is abortion. But the laws that this legislature has passed has interfered with my ability to do that, along with countless others. And I want to explain what I mean and why I'm still pregnant as I address all of you today, despite having known about the unavoidable demise of my pregnancy and despite having been to the abortion clinic on Friday where they were equipped and prepared to perform my abortion. First, I was required to have another ultrasound at the abortion clinic, as all patients seeking abortion are required to do in Arizona. An ultrasound that I absolutely did not need to have. I didn't have an ultrasound because my doctor thought I needed one. I had one because legislation has forced me to do that. An invasive transvaginal ultrasound that I didn't want or need to have, performed by someone who didn't want to have to do it. I am safe and loved and protected in my marriage, but I cannot imagine how inappropriate that would be for a victim of sexual assault or for someone who has an abusive or coercive relationship with their partner. Another unwanted vaginal penetration, but this time by the state, by the people who are commissioned to protect us. Then I got to sit through an exhaustive list of absolute disinformation that was read off to me. I was told that there were alternatives to abortion, parenting or adoption among them, as if delivering a healthy baby is an option for me. It is not. My medical provider was forced to tell me multiple things that don't apply to my situation, and some that are just transparently, factually false. And they do this because of laws passed by this legislature in opposition to medical expert testimony and advice. And from where I sat, the only reason I had to hear those things was in a cruel and really uninformed attempt by outside forces to shame and coerce and frighten me into making a different decision other than the one that I knew was right for me. There's no one-size-fits-all script for people seeking abortion care, and the legislature doesn't have any right to assign one.
So this is just a portion of about a 10-minute speech. It's online. You can go watch the rest of it, and I would recommend that you do. I don't think we've seen something like this before, where an elected official takes to the floor and actually talks about their experience trying to get an abortion, speaking directly to the people that are responsible for putting the policies in place that they had to go through, which are invasive and horrifying. According to reporting from the Arizona Mirror, only a handful of Republicans stayed to listen to this speech, and they actually, many of them just got up and left. And you may remember from the previous episode, Sonny Borelli. You remember Sonny Borelli? We talked about the Senate Majority Leader Sonny Borelli in Arizona, who made the comment about keeping the aspirin between your knees in order to, you know, control yourself as a form of birth control. He left as she was speaking, and then he apparently returned briefly, which was a mistake, realized that she was still speaking, and then he left. So, cowards who can't even stand there and listen to the direct impact of the things that they support that is happening to their colleague, to their colleague, someone they know personally, they don't even want to hear it. They don't want to know.
Yeah, I mean, there are many reasons why she is taking care of biz today in this episode. And I was going to say that hopefully there is some, it's to no effect because you just spilled the beans on exactly how she was met, and it's with ignoring. Mm-hmm. I was thinking hopefully it will move some of her colleagues who know her, who actually know her, and listen to what her experience is, because they're not listening to random mothers who are living in poverty and don't have access to power, who don't have access to communicate with political leaders. Hopefully this will move the needle. But no, they ignore her too.
Yeah.
These men who want to control her body, who want to put her through another trauma, if she were a rape victim, it would be another trauma, even not being a rape victim. It could be a trauma to have an ultrasound that's not external, it's internal. They insert a probe into the vagina and then do an ultrasound that way. That is what is required by Arizona law. And what she highlighted is abusive, and it's at the hands of the state.
Right.
At the hands of Republicans.
Exactly. And again, I was a little confused when I was reading the reporting for the Arizona Mirror, because I guess originally they had said that only one Republican stayed at his desk to hear the speech. They updated it to say he was the only GOP senator who appeared to be paying attention, but he was a handful of them stayed. Mm-hmm. Some left, a handful stayed. Most were not paying attention. He was the only one, this single Republican, Ken Bennett, paid attention. And actually, after she was done, he went over and gave her a hug. So there was one Republican senator who decided to show any kind of attention to their colleague and any kind of care and concern for what their colleague is going through.
Yeah. Disgusting.
Yeah.
We'd love to know what you think. We're going to wrap it there. 657-464-7609 is our voicemail number, where you can leave a brief, please keep them brief, voicemail. You can also email a voice memo from your smartphone or a regular email to idoubtit@dollemore.com. We would invite you to check out the Patreon page. Go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast. Look into what's involved. For $2 a month, you can help support this work. You can help produce this show. Help us deliver a message to the masses, or whatever that amount is on the reach of the show, which is, you know, hopefully moving the needle, especially on topics like this. Very important. patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast. We're going to leave you there. We love you. We appreciate you. For Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dalemore, and this has been I Doubt It.